Oyez, oyez, oyez. The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Lawrence Hagel presiding. All who have business before this court, draw near and you shall be heard. God bless the United States and this Honorable Court. You may be seated.
Technology is a wonderful thing. Good morning. We're here this morning to hear the case of Richard Raugust versus Eric Shinseki, the Secretary of Veterans Affairs. Case number is 082064. Who will speak for Mr. Raugust?
May it please the court, Robert Camper on behalf of Richard Raugust.
Okay, Mr. Camper, if you... 1 second, please. And for the secretary, would you enter your appearance, please?
This is Mark McNabb with me at council table. This is Joan Marillard.
I'm sorry, you have to speak up a little bit.
Mark McNabb with me at council table. This is Joan Marillard.
Okay, Mr. McNabb, thank you. You may go ahead.
May it please the court, the issue here is whether or not the VA assisted Mr. Raugust in developing the evidence that would keep him from being excluded from being defined as a veteran. This is a relatively unique type of case, in my practice anyway. This is strictly for the purpose of health benefits. This is not a disability determination at this point. A separate issue we also raised, I believe, is fairly resolved by the cases, the question of equal protection of the laws. We do agree that the rational basis standard of review is the one that would apply in this case. And it's significant that in SR number 96-826, the language supporting the statute, the congressional intent supporting the statute, is that the 24-month minimum requirement should not be applied in places where circumstances beyond the individual's control caused his service to be less than the 24 months. So we believe the level is rational basis and the significant language in the...
Now, let me understand. Are you saying that you believe that the rational basis standard has been met here?
I believe it has.
Okay, so then is your constitutional challenge to the statute, then are you waiving that?
At this point, we have nothing much to argue. The case law... I can't make a good faith argument for a suspect category because that's not of record. You could hypothesize about that, and that's not in the record. From what I've discussed with Mr. Raugust, any suspect category would not be in the record, requiring a higher level of equal protection scrutiny. So it comes out being the rational basis, and it's my understanding from the case law, unfortunately for our side, that if they identify some rational reason for imposing a 24-month minimum service standard, and that being the maintaining apparently the level of armed forces without people getting out short of that, it's been met. And that I would like to argue for a higher standard, but unfortunately, based on the record and based on the case law, there's not much more than I can argue for.
And you wouldn't want to argue for a higher standard in this situation? You can't think of any reason why you might?
Not based on the record and not based on the case.
Are there exceptions to the statute?
There are two exceptions that are stated. One is injury, essentially a disability arising during the service, and the other is hardship. And the issue, as I state at the outset, is then was he given due process? If we go from the equal protection constitutional argument to the due process argument, did he receive due process in notice as to what was required for proving the hardship and the assistance under 3.159 in getting all the records that are in any federal agency's hand?
Let me stop you for a second. We'll go on to your duty to assist argument in a second, but I want to get back to the I want to make sure I understand that this constitutional argument is to the side, okay? My question, I guess, let me go back to it. Does the statute provide for any exceptions to serving the entire 24-month period in order to qualify for veterans' benefits?
Yes, it does.
Would Mr. Raguse qualify for any of these exceptions, or do you assert that he does?
I believe there's indication in the record that he does. Does that answer your question, or would you like to?
No, it does. I just wanted. Okay. You may continue.
Well, let's proceed to that then. First, I guess underlying this, there's a question of what he would receive, health care benefits. That's essentially all we're looking at. The record is clear that he is in prison right now. This is not related, and we're not claiming this is related to his service in any way, but this is post-service. There are three cases that are cited in Veterans Law Review article on page 231, indicating that if he is incarcerated, he is entitled to at least the same level of assistance that any other veteran would be entitled to, and having be tailored to his particular circumstances and inability to get out and get his own records, and for that matter, be in contact or have hearings live with the BVA.
We have cases that say as much. Our
right.
Court does.
Woods and Belton, in particular. And I've got citations for those if you need them, but they're
part of the court. I think that area is well settled.
Okay. He's serving a life sentence in his incarceration, but in Montana, where he's incarcerated, a life sentence is not a life sentence of incarceration. He is eligible at least for parole within 30 years after the sentence, and that sentence at this point is approximately 10 years old.
You know, our only concern is whether or not he qualifies for benefits. His incarceration is of no consequence to us if he qualifies for benefits.
Okay. Well, this was mainly aimed at the prejudicial error issue.
Okay.
Would he ever be able to take advantage of those benefits, or is that just an academic exercise?
You know, I forgot to ask you a very important question, and I've interrupted you a number of times, and I apologize. Mm-hmm. Do you want to reserve any time for rebuttal?
10 minutes.
10 minutes? Okay. Make it so.
Okay, so specifically, the veteran in the records requested that the VA assist him, in particular with his notice of disagreement, which is page 51 of the record. He requested that the VA clarify with supporting documents particular entries on his DD-214 discharge document. And in particular, on that list, he indicated numbers which would include the separation authority, item number 25, and the narrative regarding the reason for separation. He also requested specifically in his notice of disagreement that pursuant to the Veterans Claims Assistance Act, will you provide me with any additional information, evidence that I may need to support and substantiate my claim? This was a claim that was developed on the no path, I guess, of development.
Even if there were other existing records, doesn't the DD-214 and the comments and statements and authority cited therein control this matter?
It would if they had addressed the issue of hardship up or down. They didn't. They issued him a discharge under honorable conditions general. They stated misconduct I believe it was item 28, misconduct or pattern of misconduct. But the underlying documents in getting to that, which are of record, indicates that there's more there than meet the eye. Our position, and I understand what you're getting at, that the court, or the VA, I guess, is bound by whatever decision that was made in the discharge process. Our position is that they did not decide up or down on the hardship issue, and there's evidence in the record by which this court should require the VA to go back and look into that and consider whether a VA regulation, a VA statute, would require the application of a hardship break for this veteran.
Did your client, counselor, apply for a hardship discharge?
No, he didn't. The first time hardship in this record came up was in the final decision of the Board of Veterans Appeals. The record, I don't know what he applied for. We don't know, because this is a very thin record for a veterans case, in my experience. We have before us about 31 pages, and that includes cover. There is nothing in the record, and nothing in the record that's before the court, and nothing in the record that was before the VA that indicated anything about the procedures, exactly what had happened in the service that led him to discharging before 24 months. There are a couple of what I call attaboy statements from, one is from Lieutenant Harrison. That's page 60 in the record before the agency. The most revealing thing in this is that part of his explanation in support of Mr. August was that he never quit working hard throughout a period of uncommon pressure in his life. These also speak in terms of, there's also another one, page 63. These are very brief. From my experience in reading these things on prior occasions and in military disciplinary actions, a lot of this is a statement of support and not a lot of detail. But this one on page 63 states that he only seems to have problems on his off time. It's puzzling, it's enigmatic, it's not very informative, and I get the sense from reading this, if he was discharged for misconduct, there must have been some disciplinary paper in his military personnel record, which is one of the duty to assist records that they need to get, his personnel records, his medical records. This is information that's just foundational if the application comes in, that the government is on a requirement to go to all extents to get documents that are in the hands of a federal agency. And if the personnel records at the National Personnel Records Center on this veteran, and I say veteran because he served, not because he's 24 months, those records should be revealing as to why he was discharged.
But the counselor, the documents and records that may have existed or may exist, I'm not sure which, would only support the initial characterization of his discharge as general under honorable conditions for a pattern of established misconduct. Other than the documents that you presented in your brief, the affidavits or the statements.
Well, I would have to assume that
everything in the file would basically support the final determination contained in the DD-214, would it not?
Arguably, they reached their conclusion, and the misconduct I view not as a conclusion of fact or a development of fact, but a conclusion of law. It's not a finding of fact, it's a conclusion of law. For their purposes, this is misconduct. But the problem is, if the misconduct was AWOL and the AWOL was due to a family emergency or something like that, and they had, according to other information in the file, he had marijuana use, so he was becoming undesirable and so on. It could be a pretextual determination that he's out of the service and we'll say, it's honorable, it's misconduct, you may leave. That is in the military sphere of determination, but that's not in the VA's sphere of determination where we're dealing with this hardship issue. I believe the VA viewed it as, we have one single document here that says you're out for misconduct, so we're not going to collect any more records. We are done. And I don't see, and I would urge the court not to agree, that they have met their duty to assist in letting you know what's going on with your discharge situation. Are you out because of injury in the service, which is not applicable? Out because of hardship, which my correspondence with a veteran indicates may well be applicable. And what documents you might need to develop that. And once again, considering that he's in prison, that he can't develop the documents real easily on his own. Consequently, they haven't met their duty to assist. They haven't met due process. They made the decision that he's not a veteran for health care purposes. And we believe that was premature, must be sent back for development. It's prejudicial to the veteran because he does not get a determination that he had a hardship or not from anybody. He got a determination from the service that there was misconduct, but the issue of hardship has never been addressed. He doesn't have a decision on that. And it's prejudicial next step that if he's qualified or should qualify as a veteran under those circumstances, he should receive whatever medical care benefits there were on his, would be applicable to his circumstances and his application. And there's one thing about this that's puzzling. It may be just what the veteran did, but pages 67 and 68 are a health benefits renewal form, which indicates that he's got a benefit or had a benefit that he's now being denied.
What page of the record is that on?
67 and 68 is the actual form. It's the VA form. And the notice, page 65 in the record, the BCAA letter from the VA addresses specifically and admits on the part of the secretary that evidence to substantiate his claim for suspension of enrollment of priority 8 health care is at issue. And that's indicating to me that there may be something more to this record than meets the eye. Although that it may be a response, it's speculative. It may be that he used this form because this is what was available to him, and their response was to an application that has to do with health benefits renewal.
Counselor, let me back up a little bit here, back to your argument concerning hardship. The regulation in question is AR 635-200. Is that correct?
I believe so.
All right. And under that regulation and subparagraphs thereof, there are a variety of reasons that one can be discharged from the service, either upon his or her, the service person's request, or upon initiation by the government or the Army or the service. Now, as I understand your argument, what you're asking this court to do is to go back and recharacterize the reasons for your client's discharge. And now we're talking about hardship as the reason under 635-200 versus misconduct as indicated in the DD-214. Is that an accurate summary?
Essentially. Typically, this would be something that would be handled by a discharge review board, but
right.
The statute that we're talking about is the VA statute.
And one of the exceptions, as I believe Judge Hagel was alluding to the regulation requiring 24 months of continuous active duty to qualify for medical benefits, would be a hardship discharge. Isn't that accurate?
Right.
All right. So, the Board of Military Correction of Records exists in Washington, D.C., and your client probably would have the ability to make application to have the military, the Army in this instance, review his discharge records. Do you agree with that?
I would agree.
But you haven't pursued that course of action?
Not at this point. At the point this came to me, the veteran had a final decision of the Board of Veterans' Appeals.
Well, I now understand
the process of pursuing the remainder of the records that are in this record.
Okay.
Okay.
I now understand the nexus of your argument and how it fits together. Thank you.
I cited the government cites goals. Goals stands for, as I understand it, that the government, VA, will seek all relevant records. The question is, are the discharge records, including anything about a court martial, investigation, whatever may be in the record, relative to the real circumstances for why he left service? Are they relevant? Yes. To the issue of hardship, it may decide it yes, it may decide it no, but until they're before the board, that issue can't be decided. There's factual development and due process yet to be done that has not been done. So that's the significance that I see of goals that was council brought to our attention last week, and I appreciate that. I've cited Day in my response brief. That stands for the fact that our argument that the VA must fill the record before it decides. It can't decide simply on an empty record. Therefore, we believe that we would ask the court to remand this with directions to develop all the records, including even the basic personnel service records of this particular veteran, get them into the record, and then decide the case, not deciding it prematurely without assisting him in developing the record, and notifying him of anything that they think is missing at that point before they do decide. Thank you.
Mr. McNabb.
Please, the court. The secretary contends the court should affirm the board decision. The 24-month active duty requirement is constitutional, and we believe that's been conceded here. And VA has all the information in the record necessary to reach the legal determination in this matter. And appellant's duty assist argument, we believe, is without merit. I'd like to address a few of the points raised here today. First, there was some discussion about whether the veteran asked for a hearing. Just want to make sure that you're aware that the record is clear that while the veteran did initially ask for a hearing, he then followed that up and said that he did not wish to have such a hearing. Those are those documents are found at record 40 and 43. Appellant's counsel argued that there has been no sort of up or down finding on hardship. We think, in fact, that record at 4, the board decision made a finding of fact that there was no hardship discharge here. We think it's important to note that.
On what did they base that?
On the DD 214, which stated the reasons for discharge. In particular, we think it's important to note that section 3.12A D is very specific about the exclusions. Section D1 of 3.12A indicates that the exclusions relevant to this case are to a person who is discharged or released under 10 U.S.C. 1171 or 1173. So this isn't a VA determination to be made. This is a question of the nature or reasons for the discharge and whether 1173 or 1171 were the reasons for discharge. In his brief, Appellant discussed both as possibilities without alleging any facts that would support either being relevant. We note that 10 U.S.C. 1171 applies, and that's the early out, applies only within 3 months of the expiration of the term, so that can have no application in this case. And the hardship one is 10 U.S.C. 1173, and that is very short and very specific, and it allows regulations to be put in place, but it applies only to those who have dependents, and there's been no allegation that that was the case at the time. So in terms of triggering the VA's duty to assist, we would first argue that the DD-214 tells us specifically the reasons for discharge, that 3.12A is very specific, that the reasons for discharge needed to be, if this exception was to apply, reasons that do not appear on the DD-214, And then even if there were a question of developing those issues, there was simply no reason for VA to believe that a hardship discharge would apply when that we had even no idea that there would have been dependents, much less he would qualify for under whatever regs are relevant there. So it was the assertion here that we don't know the real reasons, but it's our view that the real reasons are on the 8214, and those real reasons are a pattern of misconduct, and that supports the board's conclusion that no further assistance would be helpful here where there's no real dispute as to the facts. There was never, before the board, before the agency, any dispute as to the facts. Appellant didn't assert that one of these applied, rather made other arguments about when his time should, when it should begin, when you should begin counting the 24 months, et cetera. But the D214 makes it clear both that the 24-month provision applies and that none of the exceptions do.
Counselor, until this morning, I guess we were all of the opinion that this matter presented certain constitutional issues, which may or may not have been abandoned by the appellant. And I suspect the prior to your flying all this way, you prepared arguments relating to the constitutional aspects of this case, which I would encourage you to relate to the court if possible.
Certainly. Well, while we certainly prepared to address the constitutional challenge, we would note that appellant did not respond in his reply brief once we presented constitutional arguments. His initial brief said that he could not find the reasons for the initial passage of the 24-month period. We found those reasons in the record, in various Senate reports, et cetera, that laid out specifically why this was the case. And so we presented those in our brief, and appellant in his reply brief did not extend the challenge to the constitutional, to his initial constitutional argument. We would say that he cites no case that indicates that statutes of this type are unconstitutional. We note that the Senate report found, as was noted by appellant, that current eligibility for benefits at the six-month point, which was the case before this change in law, provides an incentive for attrition and may contribute to the continuing too high levels of attrition for first-term personnel. This provision was passed in a...
Okay, now you're talking about rational basis, right? And you're going to say that rational basis was, that's the proper standard. Why isn't, in a situation where you're dealing with a veteran, and we've had both the Federal Circuit and the Supreme Court talk about the special solicitude by which the law should treat people who have served their country, why couldn't one argue that a veteran is actually in a suspect or a special class that would require at least some higher level of scrutiny, if perhaps not the height that a suspect class would have, but somewhere in the middle?
While one might argue it, I don't think that appellant argued that first.
And well, I'm asking you, not the appellant.
And second, I'm aware of no case which has held that that should be the case.
So you're saying it's a matter of first impression?
I'm aware of no case that suggests.
And the way you start, the way you start matter of first impression rolling is how?
Well, raising the argument before the court, I think
well,
would have been.
Let's say that that ship has sailed.
Well, I think that.
What's the first thing you would have to have that argument percolate somewhere?
I'm not clear on your question. I'm sorry that.
Well, wouldn't you have to have a decision from a lower court to say that?
Well, that's true, and of course the board was right to note that it couldn't pass on constitutional questions below and that this would be the first level to do so.
Okay, well what about this court?
Now, this court is not so held and has not been asked to so hold today.
But let's just say we wanted to for the heck of it.
I suppose that you could. I am not prepared to.
Well, what would you say to,
go down
what would you say to that line of reasoning?
I'm sorry, I don't have a full answer for you. I'd be happy to prepare one if you'd like one.
Okay.
Given that appellant's counsel conceded this, that a rational basis test was to be applied here, I'm certainly prepared to discuss with you why the rational basis test has been satisfied.
Okay.
Well, let me ask you this, Counselor. If a constitutional argument is presented to the board, as initially appeared to be the case in this case. What you're representing is that the board does not have to rule on constitutional questions or issues.
That it cannot, that's right.
They cannot?
It has no power to overturn as unconstitutional a statute or regulation. And so the board of Veterans Appeals could not so hold.
Well, they couldn't overturn a direction from the general counsel of the VA because they're statutorily bound to follow an opinion of the general counsel. And they're bound to follow a regulation of the VA.
That's correct.
But there's no regulation that says they can't make a decision on a constitutional issue, is there?
Well, to do so, they would have to invalidate a statute, and they're simply not empowered to do so. A statute that is the basis for 3.12, that's simply a regulatory provision that the agency put forth to implement the statute. So it's our view that appellant has really not challenged any of the factual findings here. And the factual findings are that the appellant served for less than 24 months, that he did not receive an early out or hardship discharge, that he wasn't separated because of a service-connected disability and doesn't have a compensable service-connected disability. Therefore, the 24-month provision applies. And likewise, the D214 tells us precisely the reasons for discharge. 3.12A D1, the exception in question, requires that 10 U.S.C. 1171 or 73 be the reasons for discharge. And it's clear from the D214 that's not the case. So in no circumstance could additional development tell us that that, that
on what basis would apply. On what basis did the board make this decision?
On review of the record, including the D214, which tells us the basis for discharge.
Yeah, what did they say? The sole reason they made their decision was based on what?
Was that the 24-month prohibition applies and that no exception applies. And then made the factual findings that he served on active duty for less than 24 months. That's a relevant one to this exception, and that he did not receive an early out or hardship discharge, was not separated from service because of service-connected disability, nor does he have a compensable service-connected disability. None of those things anywhere.
Where do they say here that no exception applies? I'm sorry, I must be reading by that.
Well, the exceptions are all discussed in the findings of fact made
in the report. I know, but their discussion and their rationale, where do they find no they say, they quote the law, but in their discussion or their finding, where do they say no exception applies? Now, sometimes I skip over things, so you tell me if I'm wrong here.
Well, I believe that you're correct that the board decision at 5 and 6, record at 7-8, explains to the veteran that his D214 puts in play the 24-month exception. It doesn't appear to then do additional discussion about the exception.
It hasn't discussed the exceptions.
Well, it made factual
than
findings relevant.
It
makes the factual findings at record at 4 that specifically exclude all of the exceptions. And that's finding of fact 2, record 4, board decision at 2. The board then goes on the next page to note in its discussion of whether additional assistance is necessary that the facts aren't in dispute and the resolution of the appeal depends upon an interpretation of the laws and regulations pertaining to the requirements for minimum active duty service. And we believe that that's accurate, that given that this is a matter of law, that any deficiencies in the statement of reasons or basis found it. And the last two pages of the board decision are don't present reasons for remand here when the facts are not in dispute. It's clear that the exceptions do not apply, and the court can simply hold as a matter of law the board was correct.
Counselor, let me back up just a second here. One of the exceptions to the 24-month rule would be a hardship discharge. Correct.
That's correct. In particular, one under 1173.
All right. Now, assuming that the appellant in this instance had raised the precise question of they mischaracterized in my DD-214 the type of discharge that I received. It wasn't for a constant pattern of misconduct. It was for hardship, as it has been suggested, although somewhat in a penumbral aspect. What duty, if any, does the Secretary have under the duty to assist the appellant in developing the documentation to prove that the DD-214 mischaracterizes his or her discharge?
I don't know that one would additional duty to assist would attach in that circumstance. This is a 5103A case where we would consider the duty to assist, but it's not a computation claim, so Section C of that would apply. But Section B of that would, which is the general duty to assist,
well,
relating to obtaining records, and that limits us to obtaining relevant records that the claimant adequately identifies to the Secretary and authorizes the Secretary to obtain.
Well, now, if in fact the appellant in this case was discharged as a result of a hardship discharge, he would in fact be eligible for medical benefits, correct?
That exception, the 24-month rule would apply at least.
All right. So let's just assume for the sake of conversation that the appellant had come in and said, I should have been discharged for a hardship discharge, not misconduct, to the Secretary. All right. You're saying to me is the Secretary looks at the DD-214 and says, we don't have to go behind the face of the document to assist you or to tell you how to challenge the characterization of discharge.
Well, that's right, because the assistance in this question would be it's not something VA can do. He would have to challenge the nature of the discharge for this exception to apply, because the exception applies to persons who are discharged under 10 U.S.C. 1171. In this case, as you presented, he wouldn't have been saying, I was discharged under 1171. He would be saying, I should have been discharged under 1171. And that's not something we can assist him with. We can't change the nature of his discharge. And it is the nature of the discharge that's controlling in 3.12A.
Does the Secretary have an obligation or a duty to advise the veteran, assuming you challenge the characterization of the discharge in DD-214, here's the address of the Board of Military Correction of Records in Washington, D.C. You might want to take it up with them.
I'm not aware if there is such a duty. It may be an action that the RO takes, but I'm not aware that I'm not aware of a duty in regulation that tells the agency to point out an option to change the nature of the discharge in this kind of case or in any case.
Well, you see my point, that would very well take us out of, put us into one of the exceptions relative to medical care. But the veteran might not know how to proceed in order to benefit himself or herself in putting themselves in that exception category.
It's true that if the discharge was other than it is, that the exception would apply. But I'm not aware that the duty to assist applies to that sort of question. Rather, it's there for VA to assist in procuring relevant documents. And we have no reason to believe any relevant document exists in this case.
Why not?
Because we...
Did you look for it?
We did not. We have an undisputed fact that he served less than 24 months.
But there are exceptions to that, right?
That's correct.
Did the VA look to see if there were any exceptions? I don't see any discussed in the board decision.
Well, the board made a factual finding that there was...
They made a factual finding based on what?
The DD-214, which is clear about
That's
the
it.
Nature of discharge.
That's
but
it.
It's our view there need be nothing else. The regulation is very specific.
Well, here's what happened, the way I see it. The board looks at the DD-214, says, hey, this is all I need. They make a statement of the law, says, hey, there are lots of these exceptions because they've got a computer somewhere where they touch a button and it puts out this paragraph. And they make a factual finding. And their finding of fact is that none of the exceptions exist. Now, upon what do they base that finding other than the DD-214?
I think there need be nothing else but the DD-214 on which to base that finding.
How can you say something is not relevant without seeing the document?
because if appellant was discharged or released under 10 U.S.C. 1171 or 1173, that would appear on the DD-214.
Mm-hmm. And where is 1171 or 1173 cited in the board decision?
It's not.
It's not.
It's our view.
Does the board have a responsibility to provide reasons or bases for its decisions?
It does. In this case,
Have they given sufficient reasons or bases for making the factual findings that they did? Where do they say this, that we're relying on the DD-14? All they say is, by my reading of this, is he didn't have his 24 months. That's it.
An appellant, the entire record is completely silent for appellant raising the relevance of either of these exceptions. The reasons or basis requirement does not extend to needing to discuss all sort of irrelevant areas of law.
Well, you can't speak out of both sides of your mouth, because just a minute ago you told me they did consider it and they did reject it. They rejected it. Now you're telling me they don't have to consider it. So which is it?
I think both can be true. They didn't need to consider that in this case. Appellant never raised it. However, it's clear from the finding of fact that they did give consideration to these factors. It's true that the statement of reasons or basis about that finding is not as detailed as I would like, but I think that given that this is a matter of law and there's no dispute as to the facts here, the court can simply affirm that finding.
Well, I can't find out why they said there were no exceptions.
And the record is entirely silent for any relevant exception appearing, and the DD-214 tells us the reasons for discharge, and it does not tell us that 1171...
So you're saying to me that, to this court, that there's no record that could exist that would not support an argument by the veteran, that a credible argument by the veteran, that he could qualify for one of these exceptions.
Whether I could imagine one or not, the record is entirely silent for one. And so the...
But what record is silent?
What record? Any argument made by appellant, the application made by appellant, there's simply no reason to believe that discharged for any reason other than the reasons listed on his DD-214, and given that the exceptions only apply based on reason of discharge.
So from what I hear, understand you telling me, is that the VA gets the DD-214, they get no other documents, and they make the decision based on the DD-214.
I think they can do so, particularly in a case in which the veteran does not assert that he was discharged for any reason other than the DD-214 that is in the record.
Do you agree that the veteran asked for additional documents?
And that he did, yes. It appears that he asked for documents that...
That relate to his discharge, right?
But they do not relate to any exception. He would like to know on what basis...
Was a veteran represented by counsel?
He was not.
And you expect him to read the statute and sort out all of these exceptions?
No, but I do expect the agency to see that when the question is whether someone is discharged for a certain reason, and we know the answer to that question because we have the DD-214 that tells us the reasons he was discharged, that that then they must deny as a matter of law. That is, at least this exception that certainly would apply.
And that's the VA's view, but look at it from the veteran's view. I mean, don't you think he's entitled to see his entire record to find out if the VA made the right decision? Isn't that the whole purpose of the 5103A and 3.159, is to provide the veteran access to the record without jumping through a lot of hoops?
Well, it's to have the agency assist the veteran in procuring relevant records. In terms of this exception, we have the relevant record. The DD-214 is
available. Well, how do you know if the records out there are irrelevant if you don't look at them?
Well, that's exactly the sort of case discussed in Goals. We simply don't need to get every record to determine whether we need to get every record. And in this case, we have the one record that answers the only relevant question on an exception that was never raised by appellant until this brief, and still there's no allegation that he actually had a discharge for any of these reasons. He doesn't contest the only relevant fact, that his reasons for discharge were a pattern of misconduct. And so therefore, 3.12a would not provide an exception in his case, unless that the nature of the discharge was changed. That's not something that the agency can do. Thank you very much.
Well, Counselor, let's go back to my hypothetical, which is the veteran comes to the RO, comes to you all and says, I received a hardship discharge. Therefore, I am under the exception to the 24-month rule. Even though my DD-214 says I was discharged by poor misconduct. Okay. Now, once the issue had been framed in such a manner, it seems to me at least the Secretary would have an obligation to explore whether he is obligated under the duty to assist concept to secure additional records, either to prove or disprove the veteran's position relative to a hardship discharge.
That's certainly possible, because at that point you would have evidence on two sides. Now, whatever ultimate weight the board would give to the two pieces of evidence, the statement from the veteran and the DD-214 from the service department, that would still be a factual finding that the agency would have to make, and it could only do so within the context of determining whether it had all the evidence available and necessary in that case. So it would need to do additional discussion on the duty to assist. Whether it would trigger it or not, I'm not certain, but there would also need to be a fact-finding, because at that point there would be at least some evidence on two sides of the question. In this case, there's only evidence on one side of the question.
And anecdotally...
Could I just take a minute? Uh-huh. Something has bothered me, and before it goes any further and distracts me from listening to your argument, would you do me a favor and talk to Ms. Moriarty for a second? And I ask if you'd talk to Mr. McNabb about kind of customs of addressing the court. Thank you.
Thank you.
Counselor, this is anecdotal in nature, but generally speaking, discharges under 635-200, the Army regulation. Used to be, at least, in the olden days, very heavily documented. And those documents, I would presume, are retained somewhere in or near to the veteran's military record. And you might be surprised what you find in there. You might find the statement that customarily was issued in many instances, which was, I have been counseled. I understand this is voluntary. I've been counseled by a JAG officer. That JAG officer's name is whatever it happens to be, Captain Hagel, Captain Lance. And that document, assuming that it were to be provided to the veteran, might very easily answer some of these questions that Judge Hagel and I have been asking you. And I'm just suggesting that in the right case, a veteran trying to prove an exception might be entitled to a little bit of assistance in terms of the secretary assisting him or her in securing those documents that would either prove or disprove the veteran's theory of the case. That's all I'm suggesting.
Could there be a DD-215 in the record?
In the record?
DD-215 is one that corrects a DD-214, as I recall. Could there be one in the record?
Could there one exist? I suppose so.
And how do you know if one exists or not?
You have no reason to believe that one exists in the record.
But you didn't go out and get the records to find out, did you? The VA, I'm sorry, I say you, and I apologize. I mean the secretary did not. So what I'm saying is, what bothers me, if you haven't been able to catch a clue, is that there's one document. The secretary looks at one document. An individual has an entire military history lasting 18 months or so. He has a number of statements from fellow soldiers, one including an officer, that says he was a fine soldier. Now, understand that doesn't excuse any misconduct that may occur. But it seems to me it's at least worth looking at this guy's full record before a decision is made that excludes him from receiving medical care to which he may be entitled. After all, he did not receive a discharge that's considered dishonorable by VA, right?
That's correct.
I mean, he received an honorable, well, a general discharge under honorable conditions. He didn't receive an undesirable discharge. He didn't receive a bad conduct discharge. He didn't receive a dishonorable discharge. He received a general discharge, which would normally entitle people to benefits. He didn't receive a convenience. Did he receive? He received a general discharge, which is an honorable discharge for VA purposes, for a purpose which, you know, seems to me to be basically at the convenience of the government. It's not punitive in any way because they could have given him an undesirable discharge for those acts of misconduct. So my point is that isn't it feasible, at least, that there be some document out there to give the VA a complete picture here? We have one document. Let me ask you this. Are there mistakes made in administrative transcription? Are there duplicate records often in records?
No, there are two copies of the D214 in this record. They're the same, and they both indicate that he was discharged due to a pattern of misconduct. And I agree with you, your statement of just a moment ago, that that it's only the 24th month exception that applies here. It's not based on the character of his discharge. However, that's exactly the type of change that Congress made in 1980 when it moved the line from 6 months to 24 months. It was to limit health care benefits to people who served more than 24 months, and this veteran did not.
Just briefly, the veteran did raise the question as to item 28. He listed several of those in his notice of disagreement. Please document this for me. Was not done. This is part of the due process, the duty to assist. And it's our feeling, and I'm not going to hammer on it much at this point, but judges, it's my feeling that it's clear that they did not make much of any effort to fill the record after the DD-214 was in. The statements from the other fellow servicemen came from the veteran, I believe, not from any source that the VA approached. And I'm still troubled about our equal protection argument, and I guess it would become a question of a class within veterans. Veterans are favored, according to Sanders, for the Supreme Court decision. They left that jurisprudence in place. The veterans themselves are a favored class. So within that, are people that have suffered a hardship entitled to special consideration, special development of the record positive? That's how I would have to frame the question in terms of equal protection. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, the case is submitted. Judges will greet counsel.
All rise.